When you hear the word servant, what picture comes to your mind? When I hear the word servant, the picture that comes to my mind is a man from Victorian England. Maybe I'm incriminating myself here. Who is clothed in a long black coat and tails with white gloves on his hands. The kind of servant you might meet in one of Jane Austen's books, like Pride and Prejudice. You'd probably see the servant standing at attention by the door as he awaits instruction from the master of the house. If the master of the house requests something to eat, his servant is swift to go to the kitchen and bring back food for his master. If the master of the house asks the servant to light a fire in the fireplace to drive out the chill of the night air, his servant goes quickly to work. He brings in the wood. He arranges the wood on the hearth. He strikes a match and lights the wood, and he tends the fire until it begins to blaze and radiate its warmth in the room. But what if the master of the house is called away to another country on business? And what if the master tells his servant that he does not know when he will return? How will a good servant conduct himself during his master's absence? As we open our Bibles to Luke 12:35 this morning, we discover that Jesus, the master of the house, has a very clear expectation for his servants while he is away. At this point in Luke's gospel, we know that it is just a short amount of time before Jesus departs and returns to the Father. In just a little while, Jesus is going to be betrayed. He's going to suffer many things. He's going to be rejected by Israel's religious leaders, and he's going to be killed. But he will be raised on the third day. And he will ascend into the heavens and take his seat at his Father's right hand, waiting for the day and the hour which the Father has determined for Jesus, his Son, to return to his servants. So as we begin reading in verse 35, Jesus is preparing his servants, his disciples, not only for when he will leave them, he is also explaining to them how they are to conduct themselves in anticipation of his return. And just like Jesus' first disciples were waiting for the master's coming, we too find ourselves waiting for the master's coming because Jesus has not yet returned. So the words that we read here remain just as true and important for us today as they did when Jesus first said them. So what does Jesus expect of us as we wait for our master's return? And this is the truth that I want for us to weigh this morning. We must be ready for the master's return. We must be ready. Let's begin by looking in verse 35 this morning. Jesus says to his disciples, just moving from the previous context into this one, "Let your waist be girded and your lamps burning, and you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately." So let's begin by asking this question: how ready should the disciple of Jesus be for the coming of his master? Jesus is using the illustration of servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding celebration. Now, when we think wedding, we think, you know, maybe a couple hours in a day. You know, if it's at the justice of the peace, it's a lot shorter than that. But that's what we think of when we think of a wedding. But back in Jesus' day, it was typical for a Jewish wedding celebration to last as long as 7 days. Woe be to that mother or father. And each day, the festivals would often last long into the night. It was a good time. It was a wonderful time, a special time, a once-in-a-lifetime kind of time. So in Jesus' illustration, the servants knew that their master was going to return, but they had no clue when. But in this illustration, we see several details that help us understand just how ready the disciple of Jesus needs to be, even though they do not know when Jesus will return. First of all, you see Jesus says, "Let your waist be girded." How many of you girded your waist before you went out and shoveled snow yesterday? Well, we have these wonderful things called pants, which make things like that so much easier. And I'm guessing if you did gird your waist, your legs would have been very cold. Now, most of us know that the clothing of that time consisted of a long ankle-length garment called a tunic. And actually, tunics are very common in much of the Eastern culture today. You go to Saudi Arabia, you go to other places in the East, and you'll see people wearing these long ankle-length tunics. We might call them dresses, even though they're not dresses. And there are times when you wear your tunic long. For example, if you're simply going out and about the town, going to synagogue, as the Jews would often do, or if you're just spending casual time around the house, you would wear your tunic long. But there were times where your tunic would get in the way of what you were trying to do if you kept it long. For example, if you were out working in the field, your tunic might prevent you from performing your work well, or you might run the risk of getting your tunic caught on plants or machinery. Or if you went into battle, you wouldn't want to go wearing a dress. That'd make your movement very difficult. So it was necessary for them to do something about their tunic so that their legs would have the full range of motion that they needed to fight. So during times of action or times of labor, it would often be necessary to take your tunic and tie it up out of the way so that you were better prepared to do the task ahead of you. It's this idea of being prepared for action that Jesus is communicating to his disciples. They need to be ready at a moment's notice. They need to be prepared to spring into action. There must be nothing in the way that would hinder them from quickly going out to open for the Master. Jesus also says, "Let your lamps be burning." This adds to this idea of being prepared for the Master's return. If you know that the Master is coming, it would be a shameful thing for you to open the door for your Master only to have him make his way into the house, groping in the dark. His servants should be ready to immediately open the door when he knocks and meet him with lighted lamps so that he might enter his own home with his way well illuminated. They should not be scrambling about the house looking for the lamp and then looking for the oil and then hurrying to fill it up and spilling over the place and having to clean it up and then trying and failing to light it because the master keeps knocking at the door. One of the things I look forward to when I come home from the office is the welcome that I receive from my family. We have a large window. Some of you have been to our house. We have a large window there that looks into the living room and then further on into the kitchen. And I can usually see at least one of my family members through that window as I walk up our driveway. But it always brings me joy on the occasions when my children or my wife happen to see me through the window and they beat me to the door. I actually feel honored when they are ready for me and open the door for me and greet me as I come in. Jesus is saying to his disciples that they need to be ready, just like good servants are ready for the moment their master returns from the wedding celebration. They are not to be sleeping. They are not to be lounging around. They are to be poised and dressed for action. They are to be prepared, keeping their lanterns lit and their oil full, because at any moment, they will hear the Master knock. And that's how the disciples of Jesus need to be as they await the return of their master. When Jesus returns to usher in the kingdom of his Father on this earth, he expects his servants to be actively ready to receive him. We'll talk about what that readiness looks like, Lord willing, next Sunday. But as disciples of Jesus who know, right, we know this, we read it in Scripture so many times, we know that Jesus is going to return, but we are called by our Master to be actively ready and waiting for his return. As we come to verse 37, Jesus goes on to give two reasons why his disciples need to be actively ready for his return. The first reason is because of what ready servants can expect from their master when he returns. The actively ready servant can expect the favor of his master. Look with me in verse 37. Jesus says, "Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching." There's a few biblical words that Christians throw around so much today that we've lost some of the significance of what they mean. One of these words that we often throw around is the word pray. I mean, how many of you have ever told someone, "I pray that such and such will happen to you"? Or, "I pray that you feel better soon. I pray that you get that job. I pray that you pass that test." Now, I know that some Christians, when they say something like this, are very conscious to actually be doing that. But for a lot of people, that's just some kind of Christianese for saying, "I hope you feel better," or "I hope you get that job." How many of us are guilty of saying, "I pray that such and such," when we actually never do? I know I've been guilty of that before. And so I have to work very hard to be conscious that I make sure that if I say I'm praying for someone, that I do. I think the word "bless" is one of these words. Maybe you've asked someone how they're doing today and they said, "I'm blessed." I've heard that a number of times from many people. What did that person probably mean? It probably means that he's happy or that things are going well at that moment in his life. "I'm not sick. I'm enjoying my job. My marriage is going well. My kids are not in jail. So I'm blessed." And certainly these are things that every one of us would be thankful for in our lives. But is that the kind of blessed that Jesus is talking about here in verse 37? Is Jesus simply saying that those servants whom the master finds watching are happy? Are the servants of Jesus always full of smiles and wonderful feelings? Are you all smiles and wonderful feelings here this morning? I mean, is life going wonderfully for you at this moment? What about yesterday? What about last weekend when your power was out? Aren't there times and seasons in your life when life is anything but smiles and wonderful feelings? Doesn't a servant of Jesus ever feel discouraged? Doesn't a servant of Jesus ever feel stressed? Doesn't a servant of Jesus ever feel frazzled or worn out or stretched to the limits? So this blessing that Jesus is talking about means more than simply being happy. Happiness is a part of it, but that's not all that Jesus is talking about. This blessing doesn't refer simply to some sort of feeling inside of us. This blessing refers to the favor that the master will show toward us. Servants who are actively ready and watching for his return stand to receive blessing from their master. We've heard Jesus emphasize this blessing that his disciples stand to receive several times throughout Luke's gospel already. I mean, the main time that we've seen it emphasized again and again is in Luke chapter 6, and we return to this often. It's a very pivotal passage in Luke's gospel. But in Luke 6:20, Jesus says to his disciples, "Blessed are you poor." Now, how many of you are always happy that you're poor? Not sure if that's the word I would use. But Jesus is saying, "Favored by God are you, my disciples, who are poor, because what belongs to these poor disciples of Jesus? The kingdom of God." Luke 6:22, Jesus says, "Blessed are you when men hate you." Now, are you ever happy when that happens? "Blessed are you when they exclude you. Blessed are you when they revile you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy." We don't feel that sometimes, do we? But what can the disciple of Jesus expect from God, who has been mistreated in this life on account of following Jesus? Why can we, why should we rejoice and leap for joy when our name is treated that day, when men hate us that way, when they exclude us that way because we follow Jesus? What can we expect from God? Jesus says you can expect great reward. So if the word blessed here in Luke 12 doesn't communicate the sense of God's favor, maybe you want to jot that in the margin of your Bible, because that's what Jesus is talking about here. Because when Jesus tells his disciples that the servant who is found watching for him when he returns is blessed, he goes on to describe what that blessing involves. "Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Favored are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching." Keep reading with me in verse 37. "Assuredly, I say to you that he, the master, will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them." Imagine you're a waiter in a fancy restaurant, and you have the unique job of personally waiting on the table of the restaurant owner every day. Every day you go out to meet him as he climbs out of his car. You open the door for him. You take his coat and hang it up. You help him to his seat and you get him his favorite drink. You take his order to the kitchen and make sure that the cook makes the owner's steak just the way he likes it. Throughout his meal, you make sure that his glass stays full. You clear away his dishes. You bring him his favorite dessert. When he gets up to leave, you bring him his coat. You call the valet to bring up his car. You help him safely get in. After the car drives away, you return to his table. You wipe his table down. You clean the crumbs from his chair. You sweep and mop every inch of the floor underneath and around the table. And you do this for every meal of every day of every week of the year for many years. And then one day, you come into work and you see the owner dressed in your apron. And he invites you to sit down at his table. And he brings you your favorite drink, and he makes sure your steak is cooked the way you like it, and he brings you your favorite dessert. What has the owner done to you in the eyes of those around you? He has favored you. He has elevated you. He has communicated to all around that he views you and your service to him as valuable. That is the value of the servant of Jesus, who he finds watching for him. That is the kind of favor that Jesus will show to every servant who he finds ready for his return. He will act on behalf of those servants who were actively ready on behalf of him. And if he should come, in the second watch, or come in the third watch and find them so. Blessed are those servants. Jesus may not come at the most convenient time. You know, what if the master doesn't come home between 6 and 10 o'clock at night, which is what we call the first watch of the night? What if the master delays until after 10? What if the master delays until after 2 o'clock in the morning? How many of us would be tempted to say, I just need to go down and lay down for 15 minutes? As we watch the clock tick by, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, year after year, the temptation to take a break can become very real. The temptation to stop watching and waiting and being ready becomes more and more easy to consider. But what if the master arrives and he sees that you have not given in to that temptation? What if the master arrives and he sees that you have denied yourself sleep so that you would be ready to receive him? That is the kind of watchfulness and readiness that Jesus is calling us to. Obviously, he isn't saying that we shouldn't sleep until his returns. It might be a long time staying awake. But there should be an active focus on his coming by the way that we live. And no matter how long it might be until we see him, we should be determining in our hearts to live every day in light of the possibility that our master might return today. And just think about the confidence and the joy you would have if Jesus returned today and you were ready for him. Now, some of us, as we look at our lives, we might be ashamed to say, I wouldn't want Jesus to catch me living the way I'm living now. I would be ashamed for him to come today. We need to think about that. We need to consider that. We need to ask ourselves the question, are we ready for him to come back right now? Is all of our affairs in order? Have we been living life the way he's called us to live? Would we be able to throw open the door and say, Jesus, welcome! Because we've been living our lives in anticipation of his coming. What favor Jesus will show to those who are actively ready for his return. But Jesus gives a second reason why his servants need to be actively ready for his return. And we see this reason illustrated in verse 39. Jesus says, but know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Jesus adds a third character into his parable, the character of the thief. But we have to be very careful to understand exactly what the thief's purpose in the story is. There's one main concept that Jesus wants his disciples to draw from this character, and that is the uncertain timing of the thief's coming. Shortly after I graduated from college, my parents bought a second house down the road, about a mile or two, that we were going to do a fixer-upper with. And there was trash all over this house. Inside and out, you could tell that people had been squatting there. It was a mess. The grounds were full of rusty old farm equipment. The garage was dilapidated. But the price was right if you could fix it up. And so that's what my parents did. My dad and several of my siblings began gutting that place. They put a new roof on it. They replaced the flooring. They replaced the windows. The garage that was there was large, so my dad began storing bags of aluminum cans there that he would eventually take in for scrap. And then one day, we arrived at the house and we noticed that something wasn't right. The first sign was that the front door was open. And from there it got worse. All Dad's tools that he had locked in the house were gone. We couldn't turn on the porch light because the copper wiring had been cut. And to top it all off, the bags of aluminum cans that had been stored in the garage were no longer there. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what had happened. A thief had come. And he didn't come while my dad was working on the house. He didn't come when the lights were on. He didn't call my dad and give him a heads up that he was on his way over to rob the place. He came at a moment when we were not watching for him. That's the point that Jesus is making to his disciples. That is the second reason why they needed to be actively ready for his coming. Therefore, you also be ready, he says in verse 40, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Various passages in Scripture say it's going to be like lightning. There's not going to be a chance to get your life fixed up for him. He's going to come when you're totally off guard. So don't be off guard. Be ready. Be watching. Live your life in complete anticipation of the fact that he could come today. So friends, are we waiting for the coming of our Master the way that Jesus has been describing? Are we actively ready for his return? If Jesus were to come at this moment, would he find us actively watching for him? Not that we're sitting in our front door looking up at the sky. But I think you know what I mean, and next Sunday we're going to make even more clear what Jesus is talking about here. Would Jesus find a group of disciples in this church who are living each day as if he were coming today because he might just do so? Jesus, our Master, is coming. And we don't know when it will be. It could be 20 years from now. Right? As some have said, it could be 100 years from now. It could be 10 years from now, 1 year from now. It could be a month from now, a week from now. But it could be tomorrow. My friends, it could be today. Would the Master find us living our lives prepared to receive him?